the simplest commercial baking resource, brought to you by Bakerpedia and hosted by Mark Florca. With 45 years of industry experience, Mark knows the ins and outs of baking. He is Bakerpedia's community forum manager and baking instructor. He's here to share knowledge and help you grow connections. You're listening to the Baked In Science Podcast.
Welcome to Baked In Science. In this episode, I have three conversations for you from Bakerpedia's visit to IBA, the world's largest international baking industry trade fair, which was held in October 2023 in Munich. How about printing cookies? Well, not actually printing the cookie, but printing on them. Here, an experienced printing company innovated outside of their usual domain and entered into the baking and sweet goods arena. This is a great affordable idea for any bakery wanting to add instant customizations for their customers. This podcast episode is brought to you by Vantage Food, your ultimate baking partner. From release agents to specialty ingredients, they cater to your every baking need. Enjoy cleaner label solutions like allergen-free, non-GMO, organic, as well as kosher and halal options. Discover more at info.food@vantagegrp.com or visit www.vantagegrp.com. That's www.vantagegrp.com. Elevate your baking experience with Vantage Food today.
Hi, everybody. Hi, all the bakers out there. I am here at Primera Technology with Jennifer. And Jennifer is going to tell us about a cookie printing machine. Now, let's make sure it's not going to make the cookies. It's not printing. It's printing on the cookies. So tell us a little bit about it, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I work for Primera Technology. We're a specialty printer manufacturer. We make all kinds of printers. But this is our first food printer. It's Eddie, the edible ink printer. And Eddie prints onto all kinds of confections, royalized cookies, rolled buttercream cookies, fondant, macarons, marshmallows, candy, marzipan, all sorts of different surfaces. And the idea is for customization, you can print a photograph, a logo, any kind of graphic that you would like, directly onto the surface of a cookie. There's no sugar sheet required. It actually goes right onto the surface. So it's quick. You can produce about 360 cookies per hour with Eddie.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
Which
is pretty fast, actually.
Yeah. I don't know if I can make 360 cookies an hour.
That's just printing the cookies. Yeah. That doesn't include baking. Eddie is also a fully certified printer. We have NSF certification, which is recognized
worldwide.
That's
really good. That's important. Yeah.
Correct. And then not only is the printer certified as stainless steel, easy to clean. It's commercial grade. Also, the inks are certified. They're FDA approved. Not only are the inks approved, the cartridge is approved, and the filling process is approved.
Wow, you guys have done your homework.
We have, and the inks are also kosher, Parev. I mean, we've gone through all these regulations. We also have a formula for Europe versus a formula for the United States. So we want to make sure that this is as safe as possible technology for commercial bakeries across the world.
Excellent. So I'm going to back up just a little bit so we can see how small the footprint is of this machine. It is literally smaller than most desktop printers. The printer I have at home is bigger than that. And then it has this carousel with the cookies on it. We could see a whole bunch of really cute designs, right? Yeah. I love the Santa macaron, right?
Macarons.
So a little bit of a demo here as
well. Sure, I'm happy to. I'm going to print on it.
Perfect.
It's actually a gingerbread cookie, but...
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Good timing. Yeah, perfect timing here.
So we have our software, which you can see on the screen here.
Yeah. So it's just like printing a picture.
So the printer automatically senses the height of the cookie or the item.
Excellent.
And it centers it for you as well.
And so the carousel acts as your I'll call it paper cartridge.
Transport for the item, yeah.
That's exactly. Fantastic, right? So it's not just to display them, you can keep loading them on and taking them off as they are printed. And wow, it is fast. That is beautiful.
We're a printer manufacturer, so we understand print technology.
Interesting. So technology into the food industry. That is beautiful. So nice and clear, the colors too, especially on fondant. And so one of the other things, I was told that the minimum height is 0.08 inches, right?
You can get around that. Like this little piece of chocolate here or thinner items, you can raise up on a coaster or something like that too.
So you can put an adapter in essentially, right?
Correct.
So absolutely. Like you said, you could print on chocolate, you could print on like a gum paste piece,
yes,
or royal icing or something, right?
This here is a little piece of fondant that's
perfect.
Cut out,
yep.
And you
mm-hmm.
can apply it to your cake pop.
And then attach it, yeah.
Yes.
That is fantastic. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. This
thank
has been really informative. Have we covered everything?
I think so. I mean, we have free shipping worldwide. They're manufactured in Minnesota.
Oh, perfect.
So
yeah,
we have free shipping. It's a great company, highly reliable product, highly rated. So please check us out at primera.com/Eddie. That's E-D-D-I-E.
Excellent. So I love the name. It is so cute. It's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
Eddie, the personal edible ink printer. Such a cool idea. You might want to get yours ordered before you end up on the back order waiting list. Now we're going to get more technical and talk about thermal profiling and a new patented technology around this. Stefan Thermal Runs.
So basically, to start with, I am focusing on ovens, on thermal profiling of ovens. My motto for this is bake better with better data, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I strongly believe that the oven still has a lot of things to reveal.
Okay.
We don't know everything what is going on inside the oven. We consider the oven often like a black box.
Yeah.
So I'm basically trying to turn the black box into a transparent box.
So this is thermal profiling from looking at the heat source, not just the internal profile of the bread.
The probes that I use are positioned inside the product.
Okay. Yeah.
So I mostly check how the product is reacting to the heat is coming. So,
okay.
So my background is from the bun industry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
From Eastbolt, which is now Bimbo. So mm-hmm. I was project manager for 18 years
uh-huh,
at
uh-huh.
Bimbo, Eastbolt, before going self-employed, which I've done now for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only for the last 6 months that I promote exclusively the bake profile. So I do
okay.
that 100% nowadays.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
So I do that with a device. So basically, I consider myself as new kid on the block.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite new to baking profile, but being in the business for quite some time, I do carry some experience with me from the past
mm-hmm.
years, including from the inside of the ovens, because I've done a lot of tuning of ovens
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
from the inside. And many times ovens are set up for 20 years and nobody goes and touch them anymore. And 20, 30 years after, they're still the same. And,
yeah.
and so I think there's a lot to be done inside the ovens. Mm-hmm. And when I say bake better with better data, I use the term baking in general, not
mm-hmm.
only the oven, but thermal profile also comes in for proofing,
mm-hmm.
so upstream equipment.
Okay.
Baking,
yep. Perfect.
Of course,
yep.
oven,
mm-hmm.
but also the cooling. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
we forget the cooling, which
yep.
is super important for
mm-hmm.
the shelf life. And so I try to have a holistic approach, focusing on ovens, but not forgetting about upstream and downstream.
Okay, this sounds really interesting. Yeah, I'm very intrigued now. Yeah.
So I have developed a small device that I'm calling Bake Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bake Spike is actually a quite simple system. I can show it on here on the screen, which inserts many probes into a dough piece in one shot.
Okay, yeah.
It's done manually by the operator before the baking, before
mm-hmm.
it enters the oven, and with the advantage of always hitting the correct spot, the right spot. So
mm-hmm.
there's no questioning if we are in the good position or not.
Yeah.
So seen from the side, across its X-ray scan, basically,
mm-hmm.
all the probes are positioned on the central axis.
Yeah.
When it comes to buns, at least. with sensors from the bottom all to the top.
All the way up to the top. That's perfect.
And also one in the air for the ambient temperature.
Excellent.
Of the oven.
In that image, there was, what, 6 sensors, did I count?
I have different versions. This one has 10 sensors.
Oh, 10. Wow.
But I think I'm going to simplify it because most of the time, we mostly focus on the core temperature. This mm-hmm. is the one that is used for the bake phases, mm-hmm. which can be seen on the Bakerpedia website.
Yeah.
And also used for the safety, for the food safety calculations. When
yes.
it comes to Salmonella,
yeah.
mm-hmm. we always use the core temperature,
yeah.
which is the cold mm-hmm. spot. So this bake spike system, I also have it in real. So this is what it can look like after the oven. So you see the device that inserts. And
yeah.
what I'd like you to see is that the bun that has been inserted with all these probes is very little impacted,
yeah.
at least on the overall shape. Of mm-hmm. course, you see the impact zone, but the overall shape is actually maintained.
It's the same, yeah.
Electronics, that's the easy part. Everybody can do the electronics, but the focus of my device is really how the probes are positioned inside
okay.
the dough piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference, I think, with what has been done on the market. A small video coming out of the oven. And here as well, you can see the bun that has been used for the probes is very lightly impacted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's only an indentation where the probe was. So the probe was inserted prior to proofing, is that correct?
Now, in this case, it was prior to baking. So
prior to baking.
Between
okay.
proofer and oven.
So that's why there's more of an indentation probably yeah. as well.
Yes. Yeah. So this is basically the magic. And when it comes to baking better with better data,
mm-hmm.
the data needs to be reliable. And this is the reason of this bake spike, because you always hit the right spot.
Oh, no, that is amazing because, I mean, I think about, as you mentioned, like even in terms of going in the proofer,
mm.
if the dough temperature and the proofer temperature, if there's not the right equilibrium,
mm.
and let's say, for example, if the dough is cold, right, then by having these multiple probes, and if the proofer is, I'll exaggerate a bit, but too hot for the dough,
mm.
then you'll be able to see through the thermal profiling mm. of how the exterior gets too much heat too quickly, and the interior is still cool, or maybe not up to temperature by the time it goes to the oven. It would be really informative in terms of helping the baker to adjust things,
yeah.
A, adjusting dough temperature, and B, also adjusting proofing temperature or zones or things like that.
Yeah. That's fully yeah. the case. I've done yeah. a few bakeries where the proofer temperature changed over time
mm-hmm.
on the same day.
Yeah.
Same product,
mm-hmm.
same recipe, same conditions, except that temperature of the proof had slipped maybe 1 degree. This impacts immediately on the bake curve out of the oven. You can see it immediately. Indeed.
We face these things in bakeries in real time at times. Even at a Bimbo or things like that, it happens, right? Because Bimbo operations will purchase a bakery or a company that they, based on a balance sheet and numbers that they see, not based on how they are operating in the bakery. Mm. So to have information like this, and especially like in an older plant where nothing, like you were saying, nothing has changed in 20 years,
no.
you can kind of then see, well, what maybe needs to be changed, or you can see and validate why it works.
Yeah, I've always been closer to the equipment manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
But since I do this activity, some of the ingredient suppliers have started to approach me as well, because they are also interested.
Yeah.
The improvers,
yep.
yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an area that I'm discovering slowly, but
it's
something very new for me.
Interesting. Yeah, because that could be for their R&D labs and things
yep.
like that. This is obviously a compact tool. You know, it looks like it's really easy to incorporate in all kinds of situations, right?
Yeah, you can see it here. The electronics, I don't even speak about the electronics because,
mm-hmm.
again, it's easy to make. It's encapsulated into a heat barrier, just the size. I tried to duplicate the size of the product.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
mm-hmm.
work perfectly, but for a bun, I make a cylinder. If it was a baguette, I would do the electronics the other way so that it can be handled by the equipment, by the conveyors in an easier way. So this is only for buns right now, but
uh-huh.
nothing avoids me to make another version also for a baguette, for instance.
So these electronics, they are collecting the data.
Yep.
Would there be opportunity to have a device, something that would be like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or something, where it could be collected remotely?
could be. Right now, I have not gone that far.
Okay, now it's just a question.
Right now, it's collecting the data on a memory stick.
Yeah.
Memory card that you drop into your computer and you drag the file to the cloud. And the cloud will process it.
So, okay.
And having the cloud application, web application, it allows big bakery groups to centralize all the data and not have everything stuck on the laptop of the quality person, for instance, which often happens, unfortunately. Yeah. The web application also is made in a way to be able to really easily compare one run to another.
Excellent. I imagine it would be, with all the barriers of insulation for the heat, it would be very difficult to create something that could transmit still.
Yes, it's a lot of money, and I'm not sure it's worth it.
Exactly.
Not at this stage.
Yeah.
But this is a small, quick view of the application where you can just select whatever run you want on the left side among all the runs that you might have in your bibliothek.
So, did you develop the software for this as well?
Yes.
Fantastic.
I had to hire some freelance for that, but it's done on my specifications, on my scope.
Exactly. So you have the.
I own it.
So you know, and you own it. You have the concept design of what you want the software to do and how you want the interaction to be for the interface, right? The operating system, so to speak. And so then you work with the designers to build that for you, right?
Yeah.
So I want to stress that just also because it's important for people to realize that when you have an idea, you don't have to do everything by yourself. It's worth investing to pay someone who can do it to do the work with, like, just like hiring a consultant to help you with your formulating or things like that. And then you get that value back in the quality of the product that you create.
It's so true. It was difficult for me to hand it out, but it was worth
it. You're right. That's your baking culture, right?
It was very difficult, but it's done on my scope. So you saw that there was a lot of probes. I only show 3 probes by default, but I can activate all the probes that I want quite easily. By default, it's the S-curve, so which is the cold spot.
Yep.
It's the temperature of the oven, and the one in the middle here that shows the temperature. That's the probe that is the furthest down touching the baking pan.
Excellent.
The metrics that you are interested in, they show up here with the temperature of the dough piece going into the oven.
Yeah.
In this case, 37. Temperature of the dough piece leaving the oven, 97.
Yeah.
You can easily see if it's overbaked or not.
Yeah.
This has been changed now. It's the time over 85 degrees C. It's a kind of cheap way of doing a kill step validation.
Yep. So and but counting. It gives you your arrival time that way too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. And also, of course, the loose percentages, that's the yeast kill and arrival. So up to 60 degrees C and up to 93 degrees C.
Perfect.
So this is the web application. You can overlap up to 9 runs. So if you want to compare 9 different runs, maybe with 9 different ingredients or 9 different settings on the oven, you can overlay them so that you can see quite easily.
Then you can see if you're having consistency issues or things like that. That is fantastic.
This is basically what I'm doing right now. In the future, there's a lot of new ideas coming up in speaking with the industry. I've been working on a sensor that I'm not sure it's worth it for anybody, but that checks the temperature of the starch validation, of the starch gelatinization.
Oh, wow.
I can capture the temperature when starch is changing its shape. I'm not sure it's worth it commercially for a baker, but technically I can do it.
Yeah, for researchers, it probably would be of interest, you know, relative to, you know, I think about things like gluten-free, or other, you know, using certain
pre-baked as
novel
well.
Ingredients, pre-baked for par-bake especially, could be a very interest there. So more in the research and development type of area. Yeah. Could be very interesting in that respect from, you know, in understanding when it's happening, because then, you know, if you're going to use pre-gelled starches or something, then you can also help give you a better guide as to how much of that you need because of when things are taking place in the process, right? That's really cool.
Right. So I'm basically using empathy-driven sensor positioning. So I'm trying to put myself at the position of a bun. How would I feel when I enter the oven? So this allows me to position the probes. One client asked me to check for the steam injection in early phase of
the bake
tunnel.
Yeah,
the tunnel ovens. Steam is quite difficult to pick up with sensors. But thinking of steam and must impact somehow the surface of the bun. So I put a sensor on the surface of the bun. It's hard to quantify, but I do see a peak going down because it condensates. It actually brings down the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a special sensor. I'm not showing it here. It's at home only.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of stuff that I would like also to work on in the future, because surface sensor would apply to any baked products, not only buns, but all kind of
products. Well, I mean, especially like crusty artisan breads and things where we, you know, the pre-gelatinizing the surface starch is what produces that thin, crisp crust, right? Yeah. There's a bread that the Italians make called calabrese. Steam helps with that, but the Italians have their own cultural joke that the people from Calabria are very stubborn. They're very thick-headed, like the calabrese bread, right? Because it has a hard crust, right?
Here's a small gift for you.
Oh, thank you. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's basically the bake spike device and how you insert all the probes in one shot in the center of the...
That is so cool. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And with a card. So I have a patent pending on this one. Because
beautiful.
It's somehow innovation in my case. I think so. So let's see how far this brings me. So for my business, it's mostly to go bakeries and I do one shot studies in a bakery.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm working on right now is to position devices directly in the bakery's premises so that they can use it as often as they want to gather as much data as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they have enough data, of course, then we can add some plugins into the web application. We all speak about artificial intelligence nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
That could really easily be implemented as well to analyze curves, for instance.
Do you have a system or things to facilitate like renting of the equipment, things like
that's,
that?
I keep all doors open.
Okay.
So that would be probably one of the proposals that would offer to the market.
Because the where my idea comes from with that is that just the other day, and now you're a great follower of all things Bakerpedia. If you haven't joined already, you should look at the, maybe just something to glance at once in a while, the Facebook Baking Industry Professionals group.
Right? Okay.
And we get a wide variety of questions there. A large percentage of them tend to center around shelf life in various aspects, right? But one recently is a lady who has posted the question as far as what does she have to do for kill step validation?
Okay.
And, you know, there's been a debate going on and I've been amongst that saying, well, you know, in the end, what you need to do is you need to prove that you've reached the temperature in the internal temperature that kills all the bacteria and pathogens that might be present. So, you know, you could simply stick a thermometer into the bread before it comes out of the oven and to record that to say that, you know, that's your kill step, right?
Yes.
But it depends on what the customer wants in terms of why do you need to do this validation and what are the requirements. And using a system like this to have an unbiased data collection in the sense that it's not somebody putting a probe in.
No.
Was it really that temperature? But here the sensor sends the data. It's more difficult or less likely that somebody's going to manipulate it, right? As a way of validating it. So that for people who are smaller bakeries who need to do this for a customer opportunity as they're growing, and it may be out of reach to purchase or they may not have an interest in using it more than once, that might be a way of that, you know, having some sort of a rental system. But, you know, of course, with like a minimum, like renting it at least 1 month or something like that.
Right? Absolutely. You know? It's one of the interests of some of the clients I have approached.
Yeah.
Probably at least 6 months because they want to have some feedback from us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also renting is interesting for me in the sense that I think that's going to be a lot of development on the software side. I think a lot of clients are going to ask me for updates, for new features, kill step validation. I've already implemented a beta version is using the calculators from AIB. So I do have the system now that is calculating the kill step in terms of salmonella for buns.
Mm-hmm.
There's 11 other categories to integrate
because
they all have their own parameters.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I expect that on the software side, there's going to be a lot of evolution. So, which is why a solution that is based on rental is more appropriate in my case because of the costs involved on the software side, not on the hardware side, but on the software.
Yes, because then you could license the software for a minimum amount of time or a maximum amount of time or things like that, or that if people want to keep using the software, the probe doesn't know how to do anything. The probe takes its command to go in the bun and that's it, right? And send data back. What we do with the data and understanding, like for kill step validation and everything else like that, that is incredible.
And I think there's still a space for improvement in this area. So for the kill step validation, what I've done in the beta version, I show a kill step validation in a percentage. What this percentage means is that I, for instance, 68%, if you have a kill step validation of 68%, it means that the product is unsafe for the 68% of the baking. And then you reach the D-log of 10. And you're safe after. So I try to simplify just by showing the percentage. So if this percentage gets close to 100, then you're in trouble.
Contact Stefan for an opportunity to discuss this technology in greater detail. It is amazing how much insight he can offer you. Just search for Stefan Thermal Runs and you'll find it, no problem. This podcast is brought to you by J&K Ingredients. Their BreadMate line of clean label mold inhibitors will keep your baked goods mold-free, all while enhancing natural flavor and aroma. To learn more about how J&K Ingredients is leading the way in natural preservation, visit their website at www.jkingredients.com. Today. One of my personal favorite innovations at EBA, this company in Denmark is putting the ecology first with a boost to the economy, utilizing brewing grains again. A grain. Brilliant.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Flurka again, your Baked in Science podcast host for Bakerpedia. And I am with Marta Benedet from Agrain. It's a cool name. It's like just like again, but using the grain again. And so, Marta, tell us, what are you guys promoting here? What are you offering up?
We have three kinds of flour. It's an upcycled flour made from the beer production. I don't know if you know, but every year, 40 million tons are thrown to waste or made for animal
feeding. Wow, 40 million tons. Wow, that's amazing, right?
Yes. So we rescue it, and then we separate the liquid part from the solid, and very gently we dry it. And we produce these three types of flour. The Pilsner, this number one, is a little lighter. It's a little bit like a summer day in Denmark. The aroma, very mild, is barley. Number two is IPA. This is maybe a little bit more concentrated. It's made with barley and wheat. All of them work extremely good with the sourdough. And number three, the darker in the color is also the stronger in the taste, with some notes of cacao and coffee. And this is made of barley, wheat, rye and oat.
Oh, wow, awesome.
They have a characteristic. They are really good with the water. They absorb a lot. And you can put up to 100% hydration.
Wow.
Yes, and it makes a really healthy product because they have three times more fiber than the whole wheat flour and two times more protein. So when you are eating portion, you can eat a smaller portion, you feel full, also in a very nice way because it's a taste very authentic.
Yes.
Like homemade, and also the color, as you can see, it's not like common flour, it has like a sand color. You can think in the beach. Yes, also a little bit sweet, I would say. If, for example, you want to make a cake, you cannot say that a cake is ever going to be sweet, but if you make a cake with this, you can put down the sugar. So maybe you can replace other ingredients. Like if you have somebody that is allergic to nuts, you can find some quite strong nutty taste and aroma here. So maybe you want to make a brownie with 100% of our flour, a lot of hydration, really moisture, and no nuts.
And so any of the sugars or sweetness that are here, they are naturally occurring. In the U.S., they have a added sugar labeling program, so this would not be added sugar.
No.
And in Canada, where they combine all of the sugars in the ingredient declaration, this would not go into that category either. Oh, it helps really to clean up your label a little bit, too.
It's,
right?
Yes, yeah. It's clean label. It's GMO-free.
Excellent.
It's organic, uh-huh. 100% vegan, kosher certified. And the most important for me of our message is that we don't use any water in our processes. So when you buy our flour, first of all, you go down in the CO2 emissions. You also use a more, make a more rational use of the water in the supply chain.
Uh-huh.
And the most important, if you compare with the common flour, they need 2 square meters of land to produce 1 kilo.
Wow.
We use it like second-hand.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Rain, if you can say.
Blame it all on the beer drinkers.
Right? And you give back to nature 2 square meters per every kilo.
Yeah. So it's environmentally friendly. It's excellent. And so you have some products. So you guys produce these products, right?
We sell the flour. But we also a little bit for fun, but this time for fun, and now it's like a bestseller. We have also the crisps in 3 versions. This is Italian. Every time you get a bag of
bag this,
you are getting like all saving from 1 bottle of beer.
So you're completing the whole cycle.
Yes, right. This is totally circular economy in your menu.
That is excellent. Right? And you have some other products here. I saw that some of your clients.
One of our Italian clients, they make this dry pasta that is absolutely delicious, and it only contains a 6% of our
6% of the spent grain. Wow.
Yes. But look at the color. I don't know if you can see the
beautiful color.
Camera.
Yeah. With 50% fiber and 20% protein, even at 6%,
you can
you're adding a lot of nutrition. That's amazing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And you don't feel so guilty.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, something I need to do more of.
I will show you just a couple more.
Yeah.
We have
this beer bun. Oh, IPA bun. Perfect, yeah.
Yes, you can see it.
Beautiful color, yeah.
Beautiful color and really...
Nice and soft, yeah.
Some of our clients make tortilla, they make pizzas,
cookies,
cakes.
Nice rolls and things. Yeah, that's wonderful. Wow, thank you very much for your time, Marta.
Yes,
this has been very informative. Look forward to seeing more of these exploits, and hopefully we'll be able to bring this to North America in the future. And this is currently produced in Denmark, right? Excellent. All right. Thanks very much. And goodbye, everybody, for now from IBA 2023. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The spent grain chips, or crisps as the British call them, are delicious, and it is a neat idea that one 75 gram bag of the chips is the equivalent grain spent for brewing 500 milliliter of beer, or one bottle in Germany. Brilliant! Well, that was our glimpse into some of the Bakerpedia conversations at IBA 2023. So many inspiring creative ideas and technologies. This 4-day show is challenging to get around to seeing it all in 4 days. It is one of those shows where you are best to tackle your immediate needs and interests first, and then see what time you have left to explore, as there are truly plenty to explore. My name is Mark Flerka. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you in the next one. This is Bakerpedia's Baked in Science.